Hey, Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Hey, we have a special guest today, the great singer, Roderick Harper. And I'm particularly excited to talk to him because we share one little thing, a little background. That is, Roderick's from New Orleans. And I spend a lot of my music days there in New Orleans.
I was born in Washington, D.C. My parents are from New Orleans, Louisiana. The majority of my life has been in New Orleans. So I always tell people, I never claim to be a native, but my soul is definitely a native. You know, I spent many summers down there as a child, as well as going to school down there and living and, growing in the music down there. So I want to make that clear first.
Well, I claim New Orleans, and I only spent 5 years there. But you know what I say about it is that unless you were raised there, unless you have lived there your whole life, you can't live there. It takes a certain strength of character to survive New Orleans as a resident.
I agree.
I mean, Roderick, the fun thing about this for me is, even though we've been emailing and texting, I just met you last night.
Yes.
We played at the Velvet Note here in the Atlanta area last night. And those are sometimes just really special, fun gigs, almost like a good first date.
Yes, it was.
Except for you get paid.
There you go.
but you can just sometimes tell from like the way the exchanges are going, or like you sent us some music ahead of time, mm-hmm. you can just tell that there's going to be a good connection. And I just want to tell you, it exceeded that. It was so much fun making music with you last night.
I appreciate
it. I've never asked someone with less than 24 hours notice to come to a podcast, but it just seemed like a perfect fit, you know? So tell us a little bit how you got to music. Cause I heard, your degree is in political science, is that what you said?
Yes, and I ended up minoring in jazz studies. So I've always known that I wanted to sing. I've always loved singing. Ever since, before I really knew how to speak well, I was singing, back in the late 60s, early 70s, all the television shows, all the commercials were like very musical. It just wasn't like some kind of random thing. So I used to pick up on that stuff all the time. I just always knew that I enjoyed singing so much that people used to tell me to shut up all the time. Because I wouldn't stop. Like, they would try to turn the channel, and I knew that song, on a commercial. So they literally had to turn it off for me to shut up. So, that's how it started, when I was in elementary school, I was in like all city choir. Then when I got into high school, I was in choir, and then I got into like musical theater. My parents exposed me to a lot of musical theater. We would go between DC and New York. I saw a lot of musicals like The Wiz and Pearly Victorious and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, a lot of stuff like that. So I have a lot of theater background as well. So when I went to college, my mindset was that, I wanted to go into musical theater and eventually sing, sing, do like recording and stuff like that. But both of my parents being educators, and they were like, you really need to find something that you can fall back on.
There you go.
So, and so I had to find a happy medium. And so I figured political science, partly because when I looked at the curriculum, the math didn't go up too high. So I was like, okay. But to make a long story short, I already knew in my mind that as soon as I got on that campus, I was going to make a beeline to the music department. And I did. When I walked in there, I just was captured by the sounds. Coming from out of those practice rooms and everything like that, and then I saw the jazz ensemble and Mr. Batiste, Mr. Bat is what we call him, and I asked if I could be a part, and then my world just changed completely from there. You know, I had some introduction to, you know, to jazz while I was in DC, but I had no real strong pulls other than my first, I'm backing up just a little bit. My first, I guess you could say, voice teacher was a gentleman by the name of John Malachi, who was one of who was an accompanist for Sarah Vaughan for many years. And so that was my first, I guess you could say, intro to jazz in terms of actually singing. And he basically, like, let me know about, you know, the American standards and, you know, just some basic things, you know, to lay a basic groundwork. And then I started listening on my own. And that's when, you know, Wynton was first, you know, came out, you know, was first coming out. And so, of course, I was, you know, attracted to that. I didn't quite understand it yet, but it still drew me in. So once I got to Southern and met Mr. Bat, he started like opening that world to me. And there you have it. I tried to make it as concise as possible.
Well, first of all, how old were you when those first singing lessons?
I was in high school.
Okay. Okay.
I was in high school. Yeah. So what is that? Like 15, 16, yeah. Somewhere around that age. Yeah.
And as you started or continued to sing, mm-hmm. that now they can't turn the channel off, right? Because you're singing your own stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But how did your style evolve, and how would you define your vocal style?
My style, I guess you could say, evolved from my love of music in general, because I love all types of music. You know, I came up during an era when you turned on the radio, it wasn't necessarily, you know, it was mostly AM. And basically
AM?
Yes.
I know. Not PM.
They don't know what that is. But you know, basically you heard what was on the radio, and I used to love, you know, I would sing whatever it is. Like my first 45 that I purchased was Bye Bye Miss American Pie.
Oh, cool.
We talked about that last episode.
We did,
actually.
And,
you know,
and go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to tell you, Roderick, one of my favorite things about your music last night was all I heard was Roderick Harper.
Yes, thank you.
Even when we did a Shirley Horn arrangement or whatever, and you know, a lot of times, I'm a pianist. I actually love working with singers. I've had some of the best experiences working with singers because the words have power.
Yes.
And, you know, when I'm playing, I'm saying words in my head. It's just no one wants to hear me sing. I promise. But, you know, a lot of young singers, and by young, I don't mean necessarily age. I mean experience. When they get up and they do maybe an Ella Fitzgerald song, you know, they're singing her notes, her things. And if they learn a song, they just learn it one way from a recording, which is still pleasant for someone to hear. But when someone sings who they are, to me, that's the most powerful thing. And I was really just enjoyed how you were that way, because I know, and some of those arrangements I already know because I love Shirley Horn.
Right.
And a tiny part of me was like, oh, I wonder if he's going to sing, because I know the recording. Is he going to sing Shirley Horn's parts? No, it was just, listen, man, I'm just saying you were so good. It was so, just such great music.
I appreciate that. Well, you know, for me, it's been a process. And I think that's a stage that most singers go through when they're learning music and just trying to find your sound. Because I used to get frustrated in college. Because, you know, I used to do talent shows and stuff like that. And they used to call my nickname part of the time, at least in the music department, was Al Jarreau. Because I knew every Al Jarreau song. I knew all of his solo, you know. And I liked it because I enjoyed that type of music, because it wasn't necessarily like the top 10 hit, but it was a challenge for me and exciting to explore. But at a certain point, it's like, wait a minute, I don't want to be Aldo. I'm not Aldo. I'm me, you know. And
I, you
then
know, I also heard some only the influence, which is the because we're all influenced.
right.
Right? We're not, none of us are coming out of the ether, you
Right.
know. I heard some Luther Vandross.
Yeah, I love
And
Luther.
that,
I
you
love.
know, and I heard some Gregory Porter, even though
Yeah,
he's younger.
you're gonna hear everything. I listen to everything, you know.
That,
But
that's right.
when I, you know, I'm a very, I guess I'm left brain, so I'm a very visual learner. So it's like I take journeys, like when I'm, especially when I'm singing, and just at this point in my life, you know, I haven't lived, you know, a life, you know, longer than other people, but I've gone through a lot in my, I guess you could say, in my short 57 years so far, and just my life experience. And I just take this journey when I'm singing, and then I allow myself to go wherever it goes. Like, I mean, I have certain things that I enjoy doing, like certain paths I like to take, but I still try to leave myself open for the moment. Even like, you know, when we were doing a few of the songs, and I didn't know who was going to take a solo. I was like, well, there you go. I'm just gonna go, you know, just go for it. And I'm fine with that, you know, because that's
And
just
I
that's.
couldn't see this. Our we had Mike, the great Mike Walton, on sax, and David Potter on drums,
Yes.
and Mark Chestnut from Savannah on bass. We had what, like a 30-minute run through, just
Yes.
briefly run through the charts. And we didn't talk about a few endings, and we didn't talk about like who was going to solo when. In fact, the first song, I think the sax, Mike went first, but he played. It's the first song, and we had like 15 songs. He was playing a little long, and
Yep.
we just kind of worked together. And you know, it's to me when I work with singers and they embrace like the journey and see what happens. Sometimes, you know, there might be some problems, but the music sometimes comes out better,
Yeah,
you know.
I enjoy living in the moment. I don't trip on that stuff. And like I told you all initially, like I don't like it to be so constricted. Like, okay, you're supposed to do this and you're supposed to do that. We kind of have an idea, but let's just see how it feels when we're up there, you know, and let's just go for it. You know, I want to create on the spot. You know, I don't. It's not a play. It doesn't have to be done exactly the same way every single time.
People will often, like, we get off stage. Someone asked me last night, they said, "Wow, how long have y'all been touring together?" And I just say, "We just
3 hours.
met. First time I've ever played with them. Isn't that great?" And they're like, "Well, how do you do that?" And I'm like, "Well, you know, if you go have dinner with new friends, you don't have to like rehearse the conversation.
Right.
We're just up there getting to know each other
There you
and
go.
sharing it with the audience."
There you
You know
go.
what I want to ask you, which is like, the way you're talking about how you like to do music and, you know, be in the moment, do you feel like that's something innate to you, that you've always been that way in things in your life other than music? Or is this
Absolutely.
something that music helped you learn to do?
Absolutely. No, that was absolutely, it's how that's how I am. And that, I guess that was part of the problem with my relationship, because, you know, when you have somebody that is not of that personality, you know, and they need to know definite this is, and I like to just go, you know. I mean, there's some structure I like to follow, but I like to, you know, I can also go with the moment. Like, just go with it. Don't trip on it. Let's just see what happens, you know. And I apply that to everything, you know. And that helps me not stress out so much, because I am a natural born war worrier. So I found that's the best way to live my life, especially at this point in my life, where I'm not stressing out about everything. Just, you know, what will happen will happen. You know, you want things to happen. You do the best that you can, but when the moment occurs, how are you going to deal with it? Are you going to step up to the plate, or are you going to just sit there and cry? You know, so I just go with it.
Roderick, tell us a little bit about your new album. I understand it, the first release was just a month or so ago.
No. The 2702?
The one, Eternal Love, the
Okay, so
single.
that, All right, so I have to explain myself. So I have, what, six projects, soon to be seven projects out. Of the six, five of them are what you would consider to be jazz. And this current project, that what I still, the 2702, which is my last jazz recording, I released in the middle of last, well, March of last year. So that's my current jazz recording. I have done one previous R&B project, and this is like the follow-up to that. So I just like to do everything, because it's like before I started singing jazz, I was singing theater. I was singing R&B. I was even, you know, in college, I even had, you know, I sang classical, which was very useful to me as well when I took voicing in college. But so the song that you're referring to is, it's an R&B project that I have coming out this summer before I go back in the studio and work on my next jazz recording. So Eternal Love is a single off of an R&B project that I have out. And that's just like just something fun that I like to do, you know, and I want to be the kind of artist that can do anything. And a part of the reason why where I was inspired to do that was the first time I saw Diane Reeves perform back in the early 80s. And when I saw her live in concert and saw how she transitioned like seamlessly between, you know, jazz, R&B, she did some Afro-Cuban stuff. And to be a singer, you have to understand they're totally different places in the head that you use to bring about those kind of, you know, that those types of music and feeling and rhythm. And I was just so blown away as how she was able to seamlessly move through that. And when I saw her perform that time, I was like, that was it. That's what I, you know, that's the kind of artist I want to be. So, you know, I've been doing these jazz recordings and I said, well, you know, I sing R&B, like I do like corporate gigs and stuff like that. And most times they want to hear like R&B or rock and, you know, some, you know, the classic rock songs. Like I do all that kind of stuff. And so, and I said, well, I never put out anything other than, you know, I never documented on record anything other than, you know, the jazz recording. So I said, you know, I want to take a stab at it. So that's what I did a few years ago during the pandemic. And that project that you're referring to is one that's coming out this summer. It's already done. It'll be out this summer. It's like about six or seven songs. And it's just some R&B, just some fun stuff. And, you know, it's a part of me also developing my songwriting skills as well, and just digging deeper into myself, because, you know, Jameson had crossed your fingers. He has agreed to, Jameson Ross has agreed to produce this next record again, to follow up the 2702. And his challenge to me when we finished the 2702 was, this time he wanted me to write, if not all the songs, the majority of the songs. The 2702, we ended up recording, I think, three or four of the songs that I had written. But this time around, he wants me to do all, you know, he wants me to really do all original stuff. And so I've already started working on writing that stuff. So I know that's not exactly what you were asking, but.
Well, but that brings us to another topic, which is very interesting, is as a songwriter, where do you, pardon the cliche, but where do you draw your inspiration from, or how do you go about that process? I mean, obviously, the lyric, the songs you have to write have to be as substantial and meaningful,
yes,
as possible for you to be able to do what you want to do. What you want to be able to do with the song, right?
Yes. So songwriting, I've actually been writing songs since probably junior high school. I always had like this little notebook, and I would write, you know, try to write songs. I never liked my songs.
I know the feeling.
You know? And so I kind of shied away from it for a while. And then as I was learning the vocabulary of the American Songbook and those types of things, and then just getting older and experiencing life, just really digging into myself. Jameson has really been responsible for that in terms of challenging me. Like before we did the first record together last year, we had like a series of sessions where we would just talk about my life as he was getting to know me better, and would challenge me to write about those things. So a lot of the stuff that I've been drawing on is from my marriage, or my former marriage, and the things that I desire. Like a lot of the stuff that I wrote for the 2702 and that first R&B project came out of like a lot of pain. And now I'm in a different space now. So now I've rediscovered myself, and my music is beginning to reflect that.
I teach adults how to improvise and play by ear. I work with college kids and some high school outreach programs. But in my private studio, I have so many people come to me who are already have professional careers in other fields, doctors, lawyers, CFO, and all of them, their whole life, they just desperately wanted to make music. And I was struck by, your background, Roderick. And I'm always, all I've done my whole life basically is music for a living. And I want to find a way of asking, or, what is it about music that, 'cause you've had other careers, correct?
Yes, but all I've ever wanted to do is music, and I've
So what?
always I just have
So why? That's my question.
why?
Why?
Because it's the only thing. I'm an only child. I'm actually very much an introvert, and it's the only way I felt I've been able to express myself. The emotions that I may have, the feelings that I may have, but also, and this may sound corny, but where I receive love, you know what I'm saying? I haven't found that in my life, but I found a certain level of love coming back, that the audience gives, indirectly, but I receive it. And I appreciate it and embrace it. And so I'm just passionate about that. And I've always wanted to do what I love. As an adult, it's like sometimes you have to do, or most times you have to do things that you don't want to do to get to what you want to do. And now that I'm at a point where, I'm no longer married, both of my parents are deceased, if I don't eat, it's because I didn't make enough money to eat. Nobody's gonna. There's no safety net. My children are grown. They're very. Thank goodness that they're healthy, and they're pretty much successful so far in their careers, and they don't really need much from me. So it's about me doing what's best for me, and you just have to want it bad enough. The math doesn't make sense for me to do the things that I've been doing. Like I've made bunch of videos and pushed this record. I had to come up with money for the vinyls and for all this kinds of stuff. Pay for copyright for the songs that I've written. I mean that I've sung from other people and stuff like that. But the math doesn't make sense. But I believe like when you step out there, on faith and do what you're passionate about, God just finds a way to make it make sense.